Today is Thursday, November 7th. We now know the day impeachment hearings will be public on live TV and what new law has support from both political parties, plus why former Twitter employees are accused of spying, Airbnb's new plan to verify, and free reusable cups at Starbucks. Then hang out after the news for Thing to Note Thursday's bonus interview about a new trend to leave big cities. Welcome, welcome to The Newsworthy. All the day's news in less than 10 minutes. Fast, fair, fun, and on the go. I'm Erica Mandy. Thanks so much for being here. You ready? Let's do this. It's official now. Public hearings in the impeachment inquiry are kicking off next Wednesday. We'll be on live TV, meaning we, the public, will hear from witnesses directly for the first time. And the first people set to testify are William Taylor, the top U.S. diplomat to Ukraine, and George Kent, also a diplomat who oversees Ukraine policy. Then on Friday next week, Marie Yovanovitch is up. She's the former ambassador to Ukraine who was pushed out last spring. Keep in mind, all three of those witnesses already testified behind closed doors, so we sort of know what to expect from them already. In fact, the transcript from Bill Taylor's original testimony was just released yesterday. He said there was a clear connection between military aid withheld from Ukraine and the president's request for Ukraine to investigate his political rivals, which Democrats continue to say is more proof from someone who has served in every administration since 1985 that Trump abused his power as president. But the president has called the impeachment inquiry a witch hunt, and his Republican allies say Taylor had no firsthand knowledge of the plans. There's also been lots of talk about the role of the president's personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani. The Washington Post reports he's been mentioned hundreds of times so far, and witnesses have testified that he was heavily involved in Ukraine policy. Keep in mind, as Trump's personal lawyer, he's not a government employee, so his role in all of this is a bit unusual. Well, yesterday, Giuliani tweeted that he's lawyered up, but that evidence will show the inquiry is a hoax. Stay tuned. Well, let's take a moment to talk about something most people can agree on, because this bipartisan bill just passed Congress, and it's now headed to the president's desk to sign into law. It's called the PACT Act, which stands for Preventing Animal Cruelty and Torture Act. CNN reports right now it's only a federal felony if someone records themselves hurting an animal, then sells that video. But with the new law, it's a federal crime to commit any extreme act of cruelty or torture toward animals. The Humane Society calls the move one of the largest victories for animals in a long time. Of course, assuming President Trump signs the bill. It was a good week for hundreds of people in Oklahoma who are getting a second chance. Lawmakers called it a historic day for criminal justice reform. Nearly 500 low-level and nonviolent prison inmates were freed this week in the largest mass commutation in U.S. history. ABC News reports the state also hosted job fairs and educational sessions to help make sure these inmates were ready for release. Oklahoma had the highest incarceration rate in the country last year, so the state also hopes this will help with overcrowding in prisons. Researchers revealed the data from the first study involving a powerful gene editing technique that could help treat diseases, including cancer. And so far, scientists say the results are encouraging. It's called CRISPR. Doctors make an immune system cell from a patient's blood and alter it genetically to help fight cancer. In other words, as the New York Times says, it's a procedure that turbocharges the immune system to attack tumors. At this point, the study was just meant to make sure the procedure is safe and feasible, but there's still a lot of work left to do to see if the treatment really works. But one doctor called it the beginning of, quote, a whole next generation of treatments. Let's take a quick break now for today's sponsor, Genopallet. Have you ever wondered why certain foods impact you differently than the next person, or if you're getting the right nutrients for your body? Well, Genopallet analyzes your genetics to help you eat healthier. Using a DNA analysis, they determine your optimal intake level for 24 hours of things like carbs, fats, and specific nutrients. For example, I learned I likely need more vitamins A and B6 than other people, and even though I do eat gluten, that I might have a sensitivity to it, and that I can drink caffeine without feeling the jitters, which is true. It also includes the 85 foods that are healthiest for you based on DNA. To learn more and get your report, go to genopallet.com. And if you've already provided your DNA to something like Ancestry, you can actually just upload that same data from them to get your Genopallet report in a few quick steps. Just use the code NEWSWORTHY for 20% off your report. That's genopallet.com, spelled G-E-N-O-P-A-L-A-T-E. Genopallet.com with the code NEWSWORTHY for 20% off your report. Now back to the news. All 7 million Airbnb listings are about to be verified, as in the company will make sure everything checks out okay, including the address, photos on the listing, and other safety standards. Engadget says it's meant to give travelers peace of mind, especially after an unauthorized house party at a California Airbnb ended up with a deadly shooting. By the way, Airbnb is not sending inspectors to every home. The Verge says verification will be done through a mixture of company and community monitoring. So Airbnb will be asking guests to answer more questions about the places they've stayed, and the company is setting up a 24/7 neighbor hotline where guests can call anytime. Airbnb will also offer a guest guarantee. If your rental doesn't match the description, the company will either find you a new place or refund your money. All Airbnb homes and hosts will apparently be verified by December 2020. There are two investigations involving big tech. First, there are two former Twitter employees that are accused of using their jobs to spy for Saudi Arabia. And CBS News says it's believed to be the first time the U.S. government has publicly accused the kingdom of spying on the U.S. The former Twitter employees allegedly looked up the private data of several thousand Twitter users on behalf of the Saudi government. Twitter released a statement saying the company keeps sensitive account information private except to just a limited number of vetted employees, and the company has tools in place to help protect user privacy. Also, the state of California is now suing Facebook and claiming the company will not cooperate with its investigation. NBC News reports the state has been quietly investigating the company's privacy practices for about a year and a half. Now, California officials say Facebook will not turn over requested documents, so they're suing. Facebook, though, says, not so fast, that the company has cooperated and even handed over hundreds of thousands of documents. Of course, this is one of only many other legal issues Facebook has dealt with in the past and continues to deal with. But the company's bottom line doesn't seem too affected. Facebook's stock price barely budged after California announced the lawsuit. Well, Costco is partnering with Instacart to test out free prescription drug delivery. So if you're a Costco member, CNBC says, you'll be able to order your prescriptions on the app and have them delivered to your home or office for free within an hour. But unlike regular Instacart orders, the delivery person will be asking for your ID to ensure they're delivering the prescribed medicine to the right person. For now, it's a test in California and Washington only, but it could expand in the future. It's the holiday season now, which means Starbucks is switching from pumpkin spice to eggnog lattes. The Starbucks red cups and holiday drinks are back starting today. USA Today reports four different red cup designs will be available this year. And today only, you can get a free reusable red cup when you buy a holiday drink, at least until supplies run out. By the way, the competition also released new holiday drinks this week from Dunkin' to McDonald's. All right, that's it for the main news today, but it's now time for Thing to Know Thursday, where a different expert explains a different thing to know only on Thursdays after the news. And this week, we're talking about a trend for young American workers to flee big cities for smaller ones. The Atlantic reports population growth in New York and LA just in the past few years has stalled. And for the first time in decades, the nation's two biggest metros are getting smaller. So why is this happening and what's the impact? My guest today is Deb Fallows. She's a fellow at the nonprofit, nonpartisan think tank New America. She's also a writer who traveled with her husband to small and mid-sized towns to report on innovation of all sorts, writing the New York Times bestseller, A 100,000-Mile Journey into the Heart of America. They're also in production with HBO on a documentary based on that book. So here's our conversation about why some people are leaving the big city lights behind. Hi, Deb. Thanks so much for coming on The Newsworthy.
Erica, thanks for having me.
So first, let's talk about what's happening with this trend. For years, there was a lot of talk about millennials and young people going into downtown areas and renting apartments. And a lot of people thought that would last forever. Now it seems that's changing at least somewhat. So what's happening and why is this happening?
Yeah, well, actually, I think both things are happening. It's not that millennials aren't still going to the big cities and the bright lights, but they're also going to small towns or second towns or their hometowns. Well, some of those reasons that we certainly found as we were traveling around the country for 5 years, a lot of it is family connections. For example, we heard in Charleston, West Virginia, time and time again, I came home because my mother needed me. I came home because I was the one in my family to take care of the sick grandparent. There's also a lot of livability issues. People in Fresno, for example, were saying, you know, I really want to be an artist, and I want to have a lifestyle that I can afford. So I'm going to move from San Francisco to a more affordable place where I can have the work-life balance of being an artist, supporting myself in a day job if I have to, and have a lifestyle that's sustainable.
And really rising home costs in some of those cities have likely contributed.
That's a driving factor. Yes. Name the town: San Francisco, Boston, DC, Seattle. They're all really expensive places to live for people who are starting out or who are in positions like artists who don't make a big salary or who just don't want to spend that much money on their rent and would rather have other things that smaller towns can offer. For example, Bend, Oregon costs way less to live in San Francisco. And people who are in the tech industry, a lot of them are moving to Bend, Oregon for both the lifestyle issues. It's a great place to ski or do outdoor sports of any sorts, but also that they can afford to travel back and forth on a quick plane trip and live in a much more affordable place. And that's the formula for a certain aspect of the people.
How has working remotely contributed to this trend?
Well, remotely is contributing to the trend a lot. You know, 30% of the country doesn't have fast Wi-Fi at home. So the absence of fast Wi-Fi connections and connectivity is a real detriment to the more remote places where people might also want to move. For example, in Eastport, Maine, which is way down east in Maine, like about as far as you can get before Canada, they're really trying to attract a bigger population of people, say, from Boston, but they have to make sure that Wi-Fi accessibility exists there. And so they're, you know, working very hard in places like Eastport or Ajo, Arizona, down in the desert, to get enough connection so that people can do whatever they need to do online and have all the assets of being in a very remote place.
And I've read that some areas want to attract those remote workers with even cash. Have you seen that?
We have seen that. In Tulsa, Oklahoma, I think that they're paying $10,000 a head for people to relocate in Tulsa. I'm sure there are some strings attached, but it's a fantastic town. And interestingly, you know, the numbers are rising and you kind of find this tipping point where there's critical mass of people moving into a town. And then it just kind of feeds on itself because when people are committed to being there, they help with the whole infrastructure of the town. They want good schools. They want good recreation facilities. They want good transportation. They want good parks and recreation. They're there to help, oftentimes, to help build the community too. You know, each of these cases is a little bit different and it doesn't always work the same. In some places, you get people like in Bend, where there's a much more commuting remote culture, and some of the old timers whisper around that the newcomers are maybe not committing themselves to building the town as much as the old timers are. So there are, you know, it's not all perfect. There are tensions and there are things to work out.
We saw in some of the big cities like San Francisco, home prices go up when they had rapid population growth. Is that happening now in some of these other areas, such as even Denver, Colorado?
That's a pretty good problem to have. It's definitely a problem because it makes it harder for people who have been there for a long time and are in, you know, the service industry or teachers or policemen or firemen. Makes it more difficult for them to be there. But a lot of people are paying attention to that, to try to create more mixed living situations and affordable housing on a lot of different levels for people. That's certainly happening in Bend. And they will say, for example, that they don't want to become the next Aspen. Sorry, Aspen. It's a wonderful place, but it has really priced out a lot of the traditional and older population who are in the service industry and have to drive, you know, 30 or 40 miles away. So it's a real issue. People acknowledge it, and a lot of the different towns are working at that specifically. Greenville, South Carolina is another one, building nice, affordable living in the town. So none of these problems are new, and most of them are acknowledged. It just depends how far along the spectrum the towns are in addressing them.
What is or could be the impact on politics? Because we know a lot of the rural areas tend to be red or Republican. So could we see those cities turning purple or blue because of young people from urban areas coming to the more rural towns?
I suppose you could. I mean, I think you're seeing things like that in Dallas, for example, which is a huge town, but there's a big influx of people from especially the West Coast moving there. That's kind of a different case because they're not going to a remote area, but they're relocating, you know? And it does change the politics.
What's your prediction when it comes to where people are living and where people are moving over the next even decade?
I think the trend is strong, and I think the trend will increase because the towns are recognizing it as something that is favorable to their future. They want young people to come in. They want them to start businesses. They see it as really instrumental in growing a thriving town and getting new energy and new blood and a new economic base and a lot more diversity. Certainly, there's still room in the big towns, Brooklyn and San Francisco, for anybody who wants to and can afford to go there. But the really interesting thing is that more and more people are seeing the advantages of taking this second option.
And you can read more about this trend and our guest in today's show notes. That's also where you'll find all the sources and links to the stories we mentioned throughout this episode. Just go to thenewsworthy.com, click episodes, and find today's date. Thank you so much for listening today. If you found this valuable or interesting, please consider sharing it and passing along the information to friends and family. The Newsworthy is here for you by 4 in the morning every weekday, so we will chat again tomorrow. Have a great day.
Hey, Mike. Glad you could join me for some great seafood.
Me too.
Wait, why are you dressed in fishing gear?
You said we were going out to catch great seafood, right?
Yes, to Popeyes. Do you even know how to fish?
No, I thought you did.
Oh, yeah, I could catch pretty good seafood at Popeyes. Let's go.
Let Popeyes do the fishing while you enjoy our delicious signature seafood. Get Popeyes flounder fish sandwich or shrimp tackle box before they're gone. Limited time at participating U.S. restaurants.